Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Q&As. It is Wednesday afternoon, but there's a bunch of questions, so I'm pretty sure everybody had enough time to get their questions in. If I miss it, it's just because your question came in after I was done recording, but before I uploaded. And also, thanks again to everybody who jumped in for the live stream last week. It was really fun to just kind of hang out and do that with people. And anytime there's a week where there's not too many questions, as long as, you know, my time allows, I'm going to do something like that. But not every week, you know, probably not even every month, but I thought that was a lot of fun, so anytime there aren't too many questions, I might just jump on and do that. But let me know what you think about all of this stuff. And, you know, also, does it matter if I sometimes record on Wednesdays? I figure if there's enough questions in, you know, whatever, it doesn't really matter, right? But as always, I just want to hear your opinion on it. So let me know what you think, but let's jump in and see what questions we got. First up, Tony Escobar wanted to follow up with a question from last week about getting GameCube working with digital and analog output at the same time. And it looks like the issue was that SWIS was trying to force 480p upon boot. So once again, that's if you're using HDMI only, that is absolutely what you should be doing in almost all cases. However, if you're a dual booter, so sometimes you go to 15 kilohertz only CRTs and other times you go to a flat panel, then you definitely want to have SWIS automatically boot to 480i every time. And just then you could individually launch whatever game you want to 480p if you're playing on a flat panel, or force it to 480i if you're going anywhere else, or 240p depending on the game. So really glad that worked out for you. And that's definitely a cool tip worth sharing again, because I have made that mistake so many times myself, and glad it all worked out. A couple of things from Daniel Martinez Gonzalez. First, they're trying to figure out what scaler is best for their setup, and the RetroTINK 4K is just out of their budget, and they don't think they'll use all its features anyway. And while the RetroTINK 5X is cool, they think they're going to go for the OSSC Pro because they like BFI, black frame insertion, in 120Hz, and they love how motion blur just isn't really a problem with it. So that is exactly the perfect reason to get the OSSC Pro. And that's why I keep telling people there's absolutely a scaler for everybody. And while most people might want, you know, you think about like, oh, I want the best car, I want the best scaler, I want to fly first class. You don't always need that stuff. And especially if you had something like a 1440p monitor, with all the respect to the TINK 4K, your OSSC Pro might be everything that you need. So yeah, excellent choice. Daniel also said that they're surprised not many people have it when the price is so competitive for what it offers. I think that comes down to reviews, but I'm looking to change that, myself and a few other people. I just think this came down to, I don't really want to speculate, but let me just say that I think that the launch should have been a lot bigger, and I think if a lot more people knew what it could do and how it could do it, then I think a lot more people would be buying it. Partially my fault, of course, but I'm looking to change that, and I know a bunch of other people who are as well, so fingers crossed, but the OSSC Pro is a really good option. Next, they're also going to experiment with SNES shells in order to repair it and kind of figure out where to go from there. So, you know, maybe they're going to use some modeling putty. Maybe they might crack it anymore with sanding. I don't know, but please let us know how you make out with that, because I'd be interested to see what you think about taking a beat up old shell that maybe you were going to replace anyway and just trying to repair it. And if you end up destroying it, that sucks, but if it was already beat up and falling apart anyway, at least you gave a valiant effort to trying to keep it alive. But let me know how you make out. I'm kind of curious if there were any methods that you did that worked better than others, or if it just turned into a science experiment gone wrong. But good luck with that, and definitely I stand by your decision for the OSSC Pro. I think you're going to really like it. Next up, Dr. Lilo just added a European 60Hz capable consumer Trinitron with a SCART input to their setup, but they're having trouble interfacing it with their existing equipment. Plugging consoles in directly by SCART cables works great, but they're trying to connect it to their switches via HD15 cabling. They've got the HD15 to SCART adapter that they were previously using, and it worked with their RetroTINK 5X, but it doesn't seem to work with this. So what I'm going to guess the problem is, I want to be very clear that this is a guess because I barely have any experience with consumer TVs with RGB SCART, but this could be one of those situations where you need voltage in the SCART head in order to activate that port. Now, The HD 15 Descartes absolutely does not have that built in for all of the right reasons. You don't want to be sending voltage anywhere you don't need to. However, if you research what pins you need to add voltage to, you might be able to do things like open up the HD 15 Descartes and just solder in a USB connector or something. I think 5 volts should work. If you need higher voltage, then you might have to look into that. But you could just use the HD 15 Descartes and then have a power cable going to it. And that's how you might activate the port. You just would want to double check exactly what pins and what voltage it requires. I think there's a set voltage, but you know, I think the spec says that the voltage needs to be whatever. Let me just say 12 volts just for the sake of argument. I'm probably wrong, but for the sake of argument, I think the spec says one thing, but it will accept lower voltages in most cases. You know, don't send 24 volts or something, but I think you might just want to kind of dig into that and see. And the big clue here is that plugging SCART in directly works. That should mean that those SCART cables probably have voltage. So one thing that you could do is just get the SCART pin out, just Google it or something, and then take a multimeter, any multimeter, you don't need a scope for this, and just hold one on ground and tap all the pins until you figure out which one has voltage in it, and just make sure it's not audio or RGB, of course, and I mean on your original console SCART cable, and then that reference that versus the pinout that you find on the online, and then that's where your voltage needs to go to, and also figure out what the voltage is. If it's 5 volts, USB is your answer right there, because you don't need a lot of amperage, it just needs voltage to switch over. But if anybody in PAL land knows that I'm wrong, please, please correct me. I am guessing. This is a guess based on, you know, a lot of years of hearing people talk about this. But so I think I'm going to at least point you in the right direction, but don't treat this as if it was a, you know, a well-tested recommendation. So please let me know how you make out, though, because I'm curious to see if that would fix it. Next up, Brentatron said, last Q&A, I took a sip of coffee, and they were wondering what my coffee of choice is. So my coffee of choice is none, because I don't like to be addicted to anything, even though I'm clearly addicted to food and eating a little bit too much. I don't like to need coffee in the morning, just like I don't need beer. I don't need to pack a bowl every couple of days. Like, I want to do those things and I want to keep it that way. Unfortunately, sleep is just terrible for me. Always has my whole life. I remember being a little kid staring at the ceiling in the middle of the night, wondering why I couldn't go to sleep. So that's not a new thing. But so sometimes I end up getting in the habit, and whenever I make my own coffee, it's always just black coffee. I like the taste of it. I like dark roast better. A lot of people hate Starbucks. I don't think it's bad at all. I think it's overpriced, but I don't think it's bad at all. So that's usually it. During the day, I might do something like, I was up last night pretty late, so I had one of these Bai waters with caffeine in it. I don't know. They taste really good, though. But whenever I go to Starbucks, I feel weird spending all that money on just a black coffee I could have made myself for, you know, a fraction of the price. And I'm a fatty, so I'll get a cafe latte because it's basically a chocolate coffee. And I shouldn't do that. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of calories, but it is freaking delicious. So I do that more often than I would like to. But yeah, I try not to drink coffee at all. But when I do, it's usually dark roast and nothing in it, just straight black. At home, but when I'm out, it feels weird to spend a lot of money on something that's basically what I could make at home already. So I get the fancy cafe latte, but yeah. Anyway, silly answer, but it's the honest answer. Next up, Adam Brady lives in the UK and has a PAL CRT with SCART RGB inputs. They've been using this for retro gaming, but they were wondering if I could give them some HDMI to RGB downscaler recommendations. There appear to be many cheap HDMI to composite or S-video downscalers out there, but since it's an RGB SCART and input, it seems a pity to not use that option, as it would most likely look better when downscaling modern HD video content. So I have many answers to this. I've done live streams on it before. I'm going to give a very short summary. First and foremost, if you're looking to watch TV and not game, or maybe you just need a secondary display or something like that, start with one of those cheap S-video adapters because they're cheap. That's it. I mean, they're not terrible, and the lag isn't as bad as it could be. It's not as bad as a pound cable, believe it or not. However, it's cheap, so just give it a try and see. I know I agree completely about, you know, RGB would be better for something like this, but if you just want to experiment, that's a good thing to have. And they're so cheap that it could very well end up just being a tool in your toolbox that sometimes you need to test stuff. Now, if you're serious about it or if you want to game on it, I'll leave a link to a live stream I did with Lewis from Zez Retro, where we tested a piece of Xtron equipment that could downscale properly, and you might need to combine it with a GBS control depending on what you're doing. But the question is, do you need to go to 480i or 240p? For video content, 480i is fine, and for even modern games that you want to play CRT style, I would actually think 480i is fine as well on a CRT, not on a flat panel. But there are certain styles of games that you would want 240p, and that's when you would need to do something like first get it to 480p and then use a GBS control or, you know, any of the retro tanks, but the GBS control is cheaper and probably, for the money that you'd spend on it, better use for a dedicated downscaler like this. So I'm going to link to the live stream that we did, and it's for 480i downscalers. You just need to know that you would just need to figure out what is better for your setup, 480i or 240p, and just kind of start with that. You know, the summary is what you want to read. The live stream is long and real-time testing, but read through the summary, check out the links, see if you can find stuff like that where you are, including the Xtron box, and kind of just go from there. But if you want more details, let me know, and just be specific about exactly what you want to use it for, and I could probably give you a slightly better answer. Next up, Tony Escobar has Retro Castle's 2023 full kit single RAM Saturn version. They love it. What's the difference between the new 2024 version? So there's two differences, and this gets really confusing, and I suggest watching that video I did, which is confusing because there's no other way around it. I got to just preface it by saying, don't forget to everybody listening, don't forget that the Mister Project is based around the DE10 student learning dev kit. So that's why there's so many hurdles that need to be jumped around. The Mister Project isn't a piece of hardware designed for gaming. It's a very, very cost-effective way to take an expensive FPGA and use it in a way that you normally wouldn't have to, as long as you're able to jump around the hoops that you have to do to get there. So the differences are this. First, only one output at a time is available with the 2024 version, except dual RAM would be available. So the version that you have now, you could run 240p from the analog and 1080p from the HDMI or any combination of independent outputs from both. However, you could always only use one RAM stick. The 2024 version, which Ivory still sells the other one, but the one that I think you're referring to, only uses one output at a time. You could only have HDMI or analog. And there might be ways to split and stuff like that, but just trust me, you don't want to mess with that. I tried. It's not really worth it. But that will work with dual RAM. So the question there is, do any of the cores you want to play require dual RAM? Which there's a few arcade cores, and there's the Jaguar Beta, and I think that's it at the moment. So that's one part. The next is Ivory's DAC that's built into the newer ones support 24-bit digital output. So if you're using the N64 or PlayStation core, it could look a little bit better than the original output that was the original I/O board that was everybody was using. Ivory's board is better, but it's still not 24-bit supported for the simultaneous dual output version. So that is another advantage. If you would like to try what that looks like, and you're just curious to see, hey, is this 24 output better? You could get one of those really cheap Benfi DACs, just the HDMI to VGA converter, set your 2023 version to direct video output. Use the cheap DAC that I like a lot doesn't have audio in it, so you just use the audio output that's built in, or you can get one of the Rankies, which isn't great, but it does have decent, not shitty audio. I guess I'll give it that. And then you could try that to see if you need it. And most people think, you know, if you've bought Mister because of N64 and PlayStation 1, it's probably worth it to either have a DAC added onto yours just by plugging it into the HDMI port or upgrade to the 2024. But Sorg also has a new design that people are kind of checking out and vetting now. So you might, if those other things are important to you, you might want to hold off for like a month or so until we get new prototypes in and see. But at the moment, the original kit, single RAM, dual simultaneous output, still awesome. Nothing, no complaints with that one. And same with Ivory's dual RAM version. If you know you need dual RAM, it doesn't really matter then which, if you wait for Sorg's new board or buy this one, you're still only going to be able to have one output at a time. So that's still the perfect solution because everything's contained right in there and it works really well. So I don't know. I think you're just asking from the point of curiosity, so hopefully I was able to at least kind of iron this stuff out. However, if you had another specific reason for it, let me know and I'll follow up. But I'll leave a link to the RetroCastle video that explains all of this stuff, as well as a link to Kuro's DAC analysis, which shows the ones that I recommend, as well as the ones that maybe he doesn't recommend that much, but I still think are good tools to have because they're super cheap. They're less than 10 bucks. Next up, Weijelo said they have an almost exclusively component video setup and recently came across a composite CRT that they really like. Do they have any options to convert component video to composite video? No, and even if there were, it would be the same problem as RGB to composite in that you would have to manually dial in the signal each time that you switched consoles, which isn't that big of a deal, but it's certainly not something easy like RGB to S-video, which even that isn't perfect. So my suggestion to you would be figure out what consoles you want to use and see if you can get cheap composite video cables. If so, that's it. You're basically done. You just have to plug those in manually every time you want to use it. If not, you could convert from component to RGB, then RGB to composite using that upcoming converter from RetroCastle. But that's definitely going to be more expensive than buying just some cheap composite cables for all your consoles. So think about your total setup and how that might work for you and kind of go from there. Depending on your setup and depending on what you're looking to do, you might even pick up one of those RetroCastle Mister cases that has composite video output built in, using the Mic S cores and all that stuff, so it's native composite. That might actually be a perfect solution for your CRT, or you might go the opposite. I don't know, but kind of think about your total setup. Let me know if you have any other questions or any specific things that kind of factor in, but that's kind of what I would recommend is just figure out what you want to do or grab a couple of cheap composite cables and start from there. Sean McFarland stumbled upon an interview with the CEO of Unico, a company that's making LCD-based arcade monitor replacements, as well as their own variation of a candy cab with those in it. At about 6 minutes into the interview, they mentioned that someone with retro RGB is testing and evaluating the new version of those monitors. So it's definitely not me, but I'm guessing that they're talking about Todd from Todd's Nerd Cave, Retro Frog, etc., because Todd did the review of the first version of that monitor that they released, which was terrible. I call it like it is, whether it's good or bad. I'm always honest to a fault here. And that was embarrassing. I can't believe they allowed that to ship to customers. I think it must have showed them that their internal team doesn't understand what the actual need for this is. So hopefully what's happening is they got on board with Todd and said, tell us what we need. We're going to change this around and we'll send you a sample. But Todd hasn't mentioned it to me, which is fine. I mean, I don't expect everybody to tell me what they're working on, obviously, but they're not talking to me about it. So hopefully this means we're going to get a follow-up review from Todd with the new version of the panel. Maybe they'll eventually send me one to check out, but no matter what, you're going to get a brutally honest review. And I do think we need to have realistic expectations. Yes, it would be very cool to see a candy cab replacement monitor with a rotating 4x3 OLED screen that's 4K and has 120 hertz and black frame insertion, but somehow also zero latency. Like, it would be nice to see that, but that would be a $5,000 product, which how many of those are they going to sell? Whereas if they find something like the Arcuda panel, that wasn't the best flat panel I've ever seen, but it was very fairly priced, very low latency, and the built-in sharp scaling was totally fine. It's not RetroTINK 4K fine, but it's a free scaler built into the panel that accepted all of these different resolutions. So when I say I'm very blunt about my reviews, it's also in a good way. So, you know, if they're interested, they could reach out to me, but whoever they were referring to wasn't me, but I don't interpret that negatively. They, you know, they certainly aren't lying. I'm sure somebody, maybe it's not Todd, but if they say they send it to somebody who contributes to RetroRGB, then I'm sure it's a true statement. There's a lot of people who have done a lot of really great guest posts as well as regular posters as well. So yeah, I certainly don't view this in a negative way. I just really hope that Unico's working to make a panel kind of like the Arcuda one that's, you know, not the world's greatest LCD panel, but low latency, performs properly, and maybe has that sharper scaling built in that's not not as weird as a lot of the other flat panel scaling. So I guess we'll see. Fingers crossed. Next up, AI said they just got a RetroTINK 4K and want to know if it's safe to perform a hard shutdown by just cutting the power, or whether it would be better to use the remote to shut it down first. They have a mister that's set up to turn on and off whatever the TV does via a master power strip, and they were hoping to follow the same pattern with the RT4K, but they'd like to be safe. So I'm sure it's always better to power any device off by using the power button first. However, I think every single time I've ever powered off my TINK 4K, I've done it that way. I've cut the power, I've pulled the USB cord out, or I have a USB hub that has individual power buttons, so I usually power it off that way. I asked Mike and he said it should be fine, so my gut is saying that would be totally fine. If you wanted to be extra careful, you could power it off first, but the only things, I think this is just more of a common sense thing. Don't pull the plug while you're writing or reading profiles. Don't pull the plug, obviously, while you're doing a firmware update. But I think it's just one of those things where if you're done using it and you hit the power button, you should be totally fine. So I think this one's good. I think, in fact, even with PCs, the only time it's ever really an issue was, especially with mechanical hard drives, but even with SSDs, the only time even yanking the power there was a big problem is if you're in the middle of writing data, and that could corrupt things. So it's not the case with the TINK 4K, so you should be totally fine. Same with all of the rest of them as well. And in fact, the TINK 2X and 2X Pro and that whole line of products, Mike even has powered on by his TV. So that's, you would be hard powering it off anyway. So either way, I think that's, you should be totally safe to do so. And I think it'd be totally fine. But just, I would suggest making sure that you use a decent power supply with it. So don't power it off of your TV. Just if you have like a power strip with a USB thing built in, that should be totally fine, but that would be it. And there is protection built in. So if you do use a power supply that doesn't have enough amperage, it won't kill the TINK 4K. You might just get a blue screen or it might glitch out, but it's not going to hurt it. Mike added that protection in. So basically the short answer, you should be totally fine to yank the power. Just use a decent power supply. Next up, John Strom said they like watching DVD series like Seinfeld on their CRT, but they get sick of swapping DVDs. Is there a digital solution I could recommend that would allow them to watch DVD rips via an analog output? Would a Raspberry Pi work? So first of all, I agree and I love doing that too. And I've always preferred to use some kind of streaming box for that exact reason. But also, I like to have my DVDs and Blu-rays displayed on a wall, but I don't like to have to hunt them down every time I want to watch something. So I agree completely. You could try a Raspberry Pi. Getting Kodi working in 480i is weird. I've heard it got much better, but back in the day, it was a little more challenging. You could try a PlayStation 3. You could try an original Xbox with the origin of Kodi was Xbox Media Center. That came from the original Xbox, and DVD rips should work perfectly there because that was the technology we used. So it's not like you're trying to decode an H.265 file on a 20-something-year-old console. A DVD should work perfect there. And in fact, I think even ISO streaming might work. But if you rip the individual episodes, that would almost positively work because that's how I did it back in the day. So, you know, it really depends. I would just start by seeing what other solutions you already own that might be able to do that and kind of go from there. An original Xbox might be the best bet. PS3 could probably do it too. I think there's media players for the Wii, but the last time I tried to use it was years and years ago, and it wasn't nearly as good as the rest. But I would start with whatever equipment you have and then go from there. One of the things that I always loved using was an Oppo Blu-ray player. I loved the Source Direct modes. There were so many things about those that I liked. Some of my friends like to make fun of me because there's other solutions that are better, but those have worked great. But you'd have to hunt down like a BDP or BDP 93 with the jailbreak firmware. Like that's starting to get into high-end territory. If you told me you have a calibrated BVM that you want to do this on, then I would go down that road. But for now, start with your Xbox if you have it, or whatever, any other device that you own that could do stuff like that, and see. Make MKV is a great program for ripping DVDs, especially because you get for the episodes the individual files. You just have to rename them yourself. So give that a try and see what you think. And if it doesn't work, let me know and I could try to get better recommendations. Next up, Quantum Guitar is looking to find a way to play Street Fighter Third Strike on a PlayStation 2 on their PVM. It looks like the game outputs in 480i, and it crashes when they try to force 240p via GSM. They see some people recommending an Xtron device to offset sync in order to get back to a progressive scan image. Do I know which model this would be, or any other cheap quality solutions? So none of my answers to you are going to be easy or what you're looking for, but I'll talk it out. First of all, I have never gotten an Xtron device to go from 480i to 240p properly and consistently. Other people claim they have. Other people said they have, but it only works on certain monitors. I stopped trying. I just don't think it's a solution I would ever recommend. The GBS control can do it, and it's not perfect, but if you already have one of those, you could do it that way. But what I would look into is software patches. Are you using the latest version of GSM? Are there any tweaks that you have to make in order to have 240p work properly? Is there anybody out there on some forum somewhere that's tried the same thing? Like, is this a known issue for the PlayStation 2 version? And if not, then the other way that you could do it is play the Dreamcast version, which you would just have to hold a button combination upon boot. And that definitely works. I showed that in one of the Dreamcast videos I did, and it works great. And it's a good version too. It's, you know, it's not the CPS3 version, but it's not a bad version of Third Strike. So none of those are exactly what you're looking for, but I think that might point you in the right direction. So since you mentioned that the PlayStation is the only console you have two nice arcade sticks for, I would start by checking out other places that people might have done this. Check forums, Discord servers, whatever, and update your GSM to the latest version and see if people have specific settings that fix it. If not, do you own a GBS control? Maybe just try that. And if not, get yourself a Dreamcast and a Dreamcast arcade stick. The original ones are pretty cool too. So if you're a collector and you like stuff like that, that just might be the excuse that you need to get that official Dreamcast arcade stick. But yeah, hopefully I could point you in the right direction, but there's certainly no easy answer to that one. Well, that's it for this week. As always, if you have any questions, just ask wherever it is that you support in the latest Q&A post. The way these services work, I can't really figure out what's a new question on an older post. Plus, I really like just chatting in real time as if we were hanging out somewhere together. So any question you have, just post there. And a lot of times the questions are only on Patreon just because that's where the majority of people support, but there's no favoritism. Any support service is really appreciated and everybody is able to ask the questions there. And if you catch me when I do a live one of these or really just anywhere else, I'd be very happy to try my best to answer your questions. But these weeklies are dedicated as a thank you to the supporters. So thank you all very much. I really do appreciate you, and I'll see you next week.